Welcome to the very first episode of the revamped Always Cheating podcast. My name is Brandon, and I'm here with my co-host, Josh.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Josh, we are members of the wildly successful Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League. I'm sure everyone out there has heard of us, mainly because they're probably people who are in our Always Cheating Mini League. How long have we been playing this game for?
4 years, if you can believe it.
I can't believe it.
It's weathered several marriages.
Well, two
not our own, just one. Yeah, one for each of us.
Yeah, and and you always say the one off year you had in the Always Cheating Fantasy League was the year where you were planning your wedding. Now, I do believe that that is just an excuse that you put down on paper.
It was a mix of that and arrogance.
To mention arrogance, you've won our mini league twice out of the 4 years. Mm-hmm. So that's a 50% win ratio for you.
It's not bad. So I have, two of the 4 years, I have two first place finishes, a second and a 379th, I think is roughly where that third one goes.
People are going to be listening to our recommendations, it's all well and good to say you won a little mini league, but where do those results actually put you in the total FPL game? Like, what right. place did you finish in last season?
So I finished 1500th, 1530 to be exact. So 1530 out of 3 point something million is pretty good.
I'm not doing the math right now, but I'm guessing that's something in the 99th percentile.
Yeah, much 99.99 something, I think.
Sure.
But my goal was to get in the top 1,000. Didn't quite do it. I think there's a reason for that, which is that I was actually chasing somebody who was doing even better most of the year, and I had to make some kind of risky / insane moves the last 10 or
and you had a point to prove because you were chasing a rookie in our league who was his first year, and this is kind of a trope, I think, in fantasy sports, all sports basically, is the beginner's luck, and people love to root for the underdog. But if, say, Leicester City was going to win the league last year, I don't think that would really sit right with anybody. So you really wanted to prove a point to this guy Ben, I think.
Well, we didn't know he was like a fantasy savant when he joined the league, that he's, you know, in several different basketball and football, et cetera, fantasy leagues.
Yeah.
We bit off more than we could chew when we added him.
For the record, I have beaten you one out of the 4 seasons. I think it was 2 seasons ago where I had my best finish, where I was in the top 30,000. So okay. Last year I at least squeezed into the top 50,000 in the world. I wrote the number down, 49,640.
Okay, not bad.
Again, we're looking at the 99.9 percentile, if my math is correct.
And I think I finished 1530 last year, and then 2 years before that I was, I think I was 2204. So two top 2,500 finishes, not terrible. Could be a little better, but you know, not so bad. I don't know where I am in the Fantasy Football Scout Hall of Fame. Pretty low, I think.
So listen, we're pretty good. We're probably the best Americans to ever play fantasy soccer. That's no question.
That's been established.
But we won't be judged ultimately by our point tallies or where we finish in the overall FPL. We will be judged, though, on one major criteria, which is the team name of our fantasy team. Now, we take different approaches. I have had one name for the entire 4, now going on 5-season run. I am the BK Broilers because my name is Brandon Kelly, so the initials are BK. And if you recall, there is a hit sandwich at Burger King called the Broiler. It's flame broiled.
I do recall.
So it just sort of fits. And I can't really change my name, my team name, because I have an ongoing rivalry with another guy in our mini league, Justin. And his team name is the In-N-Out Swingers, named after the In-N-Out hamburger joint in California. So we have an ongoing competition called the Fast Food Cup. So I'm kind of married to this whole fast food situation. But
you don't think there are other fast food options you could take? Like, you couldn't just keep moving different ways? I mean, there are a lot of...
Well, I would consider, if I actually do win our league at some point, maybe I could just change my team name to the King. It sticks with the Burger King theme, and it also is a title befitting royalty.
Yeah, I am curious how this year is going to go, because
the McNuggets doesn't really have a nice ring to it.
After I won the second year, I used a name that I've been storing away, which was RVPYT, which is Robin Van Persie, and then PYT, the great Michael Jackson song.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah. last year, I went back to and that year was a disaster. So I went back to my roots, which are puns. Uh-huh. And last year, I was Baccarat Lasagna. This year, I'm going with Magic Micah Richards. That may change to Rome Pig : Genesis. Although now I'm a little worried about that.
You express your concern. I'll tell you my concern about that team. Okay.
My concern with that is that movie, I think, is already out of the theaters, Terminator Genesis. Yeah. And so I'm worried that reference is going to be incredibly dated, even by the time the season rolls around in a week and a half.
My concern for you also is, though, I believe we heard this nickname Rune Pig maybe on some highly rated podcast. I'm still not sure how well known a Wayne Rooney's nickname Rune Pig is, if well known at all. Because apparently somebody thought he looked like a pig, and so they created like a portmanteau there.
I haven't been able to see his name in print or see him on a screen without the word Room Pig. It has replaced Rooney in every way.
Yeah, I hate to tell you this, but I think Room Pig Genesis is a non-starter.
What about That'll Do Room Pig, a reference to the ending of Babe, Pig in the City?
Or is that the original Babe? I think it's the original Babe, not Pig in the City.
Maybe it is. I don't know, actually.
I do like that. If I were to have a pun name, I felt like this season I would have gone with Hellman's Mane after the Southampton winger, Sadio Mane.
Yeah, I think that one's better on the screen. You know, I think out loud it takes a second. You know,
yeah, it doesn't really sink in right away.
I think you're focused on the Hellman. You know, and I'm trying to remember for a famous Hellman.
Yeah, he sounds like maybe an American general in the Pacific Theater of War. General
does.
Hellman,
Douglas McHellman.
All right, so our stance on team names, that's been established. Before we get into the meat of this episode, let's just quickly share what actual football club in England we support. Because let's be clear, though we're American, we're not really big MLS fans, or we just haven't taken the time to know and love the league. We're just big Premier League fans.
If you say so. NYCFC, all the way, baby.
Hey, we're going to see NYC play DC United in a couple weeks.
Now, after that 5-3 win on Sunday, I'm actually a little more excited about NYCFC. I mean, I do love...
So it's NYC beat Orlando City FC 5-3, right?
Yeah. I am not a Man City fan. I do feel like it's hard to really give your heart to NYCFC without being a Man City fan, because it's sort of a feeder club for Man City.
Sure.
Although that said, I mean, is it really a feeder club? How often are players really going to be graduating from NYCFC to...
I think the bigger problem is less the feeder club nature and more that the money is all intertwined. So say you had personal political beliefs that ran against like Saudi oil barons, maybe you'd have an issue.
Right.
Not that Russian oligarchs that run every other team are completely virtuous, but... Well, we're going to get totally sidetracked here. So you are not a Man City fan.
Right. I'm not a Man City fan. I am an Arsenal fan. But at this point, I feel like I'm primarily a fantasy Premier League fan. I mean, if it's week eight and Arsenal is playing if they're playing West Brom or something like that, and I don't have any horses in that match, I am much more inclined to watch whatever the game that has the highest fantasy implications is. The fantasy world has definitely replaced. It's like every non-fantasy person's worst nightmare, right?
I think that's the...
I care more about the fantasy world than I do the actual...
But I think we're in a special position in that the fantasy... We are good spokespeople for the fantasy leagues because we didn't grow up in England. We don't have fathers or grandfathers or mothers or grandmothers that grew up rooting for these teams. So we don't have an emotional stake. Whereas there's another guy in our mini league, Jeremy, who was born and raised in Liverpool, and he's red or dead. And he was saying his FPL team suffers because he has certain emotional reasons why he couldn't put Eden Hazard in his midfield on his fantasy team. Therefore, yeah. His team blew.
It is something I do think about sometimes, because there is a part of me that wants to have an Arsenal player a lot of the time. It's just more fun, you know. It gives me a reason to watch them play.
Right.
It typically works out. I mean, there's such an attacking team that you typically do have a player on that team, whether it's one of their wing backs or Olivier Giroud or one of their like 17 attacking midfielders.
Well, for me, this is totally not an issue because the team I started supporting is Fulham Football Club, who have long been relegated to the, not long, but like 2 seasons ago, were relegated to the Championship. So I have no horse in this race. Last season, I tried to adopt Aston Villa, but what has happened to that club over this summer has caused me to just like totally eject from that plan.
So is there a new team? Are you pulling for Bournemouth or Watford?
I think maybe I'm going to lean toward Watford. A lot of people, and we'll get to our Watford discussion in a little bit, because we're going to give the rundown on all the newly promoted teams. But there's a lot of hate out there for the Watford kits, the bright yellow and red. I'm feeling those kits. I'm feeling them in a major way. And I love a moose crest. And I don't say that because I don't say that out of irony. I think I really do like it.
My team is Arsenal. If I had a second team, it would be Swansea. I like a lot.
Speaking
of
good crest,
I like spread my love around.
Yeah,
I love Southampton
too. You're like a kindergarten teacher. You just want to see them all do well and have fun.
Yeah, exactly. They all seem like nice people. I like Sunderland. I don't know. I'm all over the place, really. But I would say Southampton, Arsenal, Sunderland. I guess those are the three. and Swansea. So four to 20. That's not two. Oh, and Norwich. So that's five.
So again, we're going to get to those promoted teams, but first we wanted to talk about our general rules of thumb. So if you're just getting into the Fantasy Premier League and you're trying to figure out what the tips of the trade are, Josh and I, we're going to run down our general rules of thumb as we go through the season.
Did you say tips of the trade?
Tips of the trade? yeah. Like, beef tips, sirloin tips.
Any Hormel product will do.
So did you write anything down, Josh? Did you take notes? Did you prepare for this? Do you want to get us started?
I did. I have my three rules.
The best rules always come in three.
That's right. And I actually probably have closer to like 40 rules, but these are the three that I've decided to share here. Three key rules, I think. And so do you have three as well?
Weirdly enough, I do have exactly three.
But maybe we can go back and forth. I'll do one. You can do one.
Yeah, okay, that works.
So here is my first rule. It's actually born out of the disaster from 2 seasons ago. And I will say, I was getting married. It was a pretty big commitment.
I got married last year. I still finished in fourth place.
That's true. But 2 years ago, I had won the league the year before. I kind of won it running away, and I was just a little too cocky, and I wanted to win it my way the following year. Way too – just arrogant. So
you're
arrogant.
Like, yeah, you're like the classic chef on Top Chef who wins the immunity challenge and then just makes a really crummy dessert. Sorry for the crumb pun there, but that's exactly what you're like.
So 2 years ago – last year was a bit different, but 2 years ago – it was a real bandwagon season, and you needed to have three players. You needed to have Yaya Toure, Luis Suarez, and Aaron Ramsey. And you just needed to have them the entire season, basically, start to finish. I guess Ramsey got injured late in the second half of the season. But
I feel like even when he came back from injury, he was just back to his old self.
Yeah, and if you didn't have those guys, you really couldn't win, especially Luis Suarez. And that was the season. I think he had started the season with like a 9-game suspension or 7-game suspension. for biting Ivanovich the year before.
Or was it the racist issue?
I think that was the year before. I think the Ivanovich one was the one that happened late in the season before that.
Yeah, quite the track record.
So anyway, he comes out like gangbusters, and then you have Torrey scoring, and Aaron Ramsey started really cheap that year. I think he might have been $5.5 million or maybe 6.5.
Right.
And I think it was 6.5.
Because prior to that, it would be a crapshoot whether that guy would even get into the game.
Right,
exactly. And if he did, it'd usually be in the 75th minute. He'd sky a few shots over the crossbar from 20 yards out.
Yeah, there used to be that joke a few years ago that every time he scored, somebody died. And like in the previous three seasons, he'd scored like 4 goals total. And every time he scored, someone famous had passed away. There was, that's how infrequently he was, in the action. So those guys started doing really well. And maybe around week 7, whatever, Suarez came back, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It's not stopping. They just continue to get points, attacking points in every game. And I'm like, well, it's too late now. Like, their value has risen too high. Everyone has them. I need a differential. I can't pick these guys up, I'm just going to have to wait it out and hope they stop scoring.
And you, at that point, get trapped in the cage of your own logic.
Yeah, you do. And you forget that the season is incredibly long. I mean, it basically takes up the entire, the entire year. So if it's week 10, week 15, week 20, week 25, you still have a full season left. If you're doing, NFL fantasy, week 14 weeks is the whole season.
Yeah.
So my first rule is, don't decide it's too late to jump on a bandwagon. Sometimes you just have to get on board, even though other people have that player. You gotta ride that ship like everybody else and try to get your differential points elsewhere.
Well, we're gonna have to move on to the next one because my second bullet on my list here was jump on bandwagons, because I am guilty of this like everyone else. And even more recently, last season, Harry Kane was a true bandwagon, and I just couldn't believe that he kept his run going, and I just didn't buy it. And then it was that Chelsea game where he scored did he score a hat trick and get 2 assists, or was it 2 goals and 3 assists?
I think it was a hat trick and 2 assists, the New Year's Day game.
It was just like a total bucket load of points. And at that point, I realized, oh, well, you just have to have this guy. And by that point, I lost the bargain that he was at 5.0 or 5.5, whatever it was. And also, at that point, everyone jumped on that bandwagon. So it's a little bit different than the previous season, where everyone was already on the bandwagon before, Josh, you decided to get on board and decided it was too late.
Yeah.
You're going to count more times that the not getting on the bandwagon bites you than you are going to count times that it turns out you were right to not get on it. So percentages would show, just jump on the bandwagon. Say it doesn't work out, just make a transfer.
All right, so our first, the first point for both of us is, follow the pack.
Okay,
it's a very bold first bullet for both of us.
I'm going to go with my next rule of thumb, which is a very positive rule everyone plays, and this rule is pretty self-explanatory. If at all possible, everyone on your 15-man squad should be playing. If possible, every man on your 15-man squad should be starting. Now, that gets a little dicey when you're trying to fill like the 15th position and you've got 4.0 million pounds left to spend on your last defender.
Yeah.
But there's nothing worse than knowing you're going to have to bring somebody off the bench and all the people on your bench aren't starters or aren't playing. Even if you've got a bench guy that plays on the defense, never has a chance of scoring a goal, or say you've got a defensive midfielder who probably has less chance of getting points than somebody in the defense. Uh-huh. There's just that psychological thing. If you know that bench player is coming on, you could at least stand to get 1 point as opposed to 0 points.
Yeah.
So it's just good strategy, and it's also just a positive philosophy for every weekend.
Yeah, last year was a little strange, actually. It didn't come to the fore as much as I had in years past. I felt like, yeah, it's typically around Christmas time when everything just gets a little crazy, you know? It's kind of, you know, players being benched, they're not starting, you know, you got to go deep to your bench, and often you have players who, you know, you can't even field a full 11 because so many people are getting rested. And that didn't happen last year, I think probably because I think Mourinho basically played all of his top players in all of the important games, or, you know, all of the Christmas fixtures. You know, I think Hazard, Terry, Ivanovic, possibly Fabregas, they all played four games in 11 days or whatever it was.
I was playing with fire with that squad, too, because I had Cesar Azpilicueta in my defense for the longest time, and he was always on the chopping block for the starting lineup, and I think I rode him through Christmas, and it did end up panning out. And then, but then the latter half of the season, he was touch and go.
Yeah, actually, this goes right into my second point, which is kind of it's a different spin on yours, which is that don't pick up a defender if they aren't guaranteed to start. I was thinking specifically of Azpilicueta when I thought about this, because although I knew you also had Bakary Sagna for a while last year, and
this is like the second or third time you've said that, and that is not true. You're confusing him with Gael Clichy.
Okay, all right, Gael Clichy, whatever. I think they're both 5 million. So it's very tempting with a team like Arsenal or Man U or Man City to or Chelsea for that matter, to pick up one of these defenders that doesn't cost 7 million or isn't, you know, 6 million plus, and just hope that it works out in your favor. And I think some people can do it if you've got enough balance in your bench. I think you can get away with it. But it's too much anxiety for me. You know, it's like I can't sleep on a Friday night if I know that the next morning, you know, the team sheet's going to come out and my player may or may not be, you know, starting that game. It's just I can't handle the pressure. But I also think it's crucial. I mean, you know, so I mentioned, you know, being in a really tight head-to-head matchup last year. And so I finished 15th, 30th. Ben, the guy that we were competing with, also finished in the top 2,000. And I think in the end, I won by just 10 points. So, I mean, that's two starts right there. You know, two starts and two clean sheets from a defender.
If you could take that week back where you started Mangala in the Man City defense, you'd do it in a heartbeat. I know you would.
Yeah, I had Mangala for, I think, 3 weeks. And I got, like, 0, -1, and 0 or something like that. I just think that if you're going to, you're better off having one of those 5 million Stoke City defenders, or, you know, just having, like, you know, you pick the one defender, your one expensive defender, and then the rest need to be sort of spread out, you know, lots of 5 million guys, yeah. Or, you know, yeah. Or if you can find a, you know, last year near the end of the season, Leicester went on this run, you know, where they were racking up clean sheets and they were just full. They were lousy with 4 and 4.5 million defenders.
Yeah, I mean, we'll touch on this as we go through the season, but strategies with defense is probably one of the more complex things in the game, and also one of the hardest transfers to get yourself to actually make. Because, well, I mean, the only thing less sexy than a defensive transfer is a goalkeeper transfer.
Yeah, and but, I think that's specifically why I said don't pick up a defender if they aren't going to start, because it's pretty, you know, attacking mid, you know, forwards, attacking midfielders, I feel like those are getting rotated in and out, you know.
Yeah, and
like,
if you can have a rotation, if one of your big time defenders ends up getting a one game suspension or he tweaks his hamstring or something like that, then you can at least ride that injury out for 1 or 2 weeks without having to totally rebuild your back line.
I ended up stuck with Chris Baird for like the last 12 weeks of the season,
former Fulham player,
because there was great, you know, pedigree. There was just, I could never, I was, you know, the matchup I was in against Ben was so tight that I just couldn't ever waste a transfer. So he just sat there collecting, because he kept coming in at the 89th minute. He was like the human victory cigar. So I could never.
What does that mean, a human victory cigar?
It's a term, you hear it more often in basketball. It's like a player comes in when the game is totally, when it's a blowout, you know, like when it's totally out of hand. They bring him in because nothing they can do will change the game, right? The game is over one way or the other once this guy enters
the proverbial. Who is that walk-on guy who played for the Michigan State basketball team, which the super senior guy whenever they'd put him in, you knew the game was over.
Oh yeah, well, there's always one. they're always like some 5'5", you know, floppy haired guy.
Okay, so my last tip is always play the double game week, because if you don't play, you're gonna miss out on a lot of points. There was one major double game week last season that everyone played and nobody got any points. It was like the least sexy game week of all time.
Yeah.
And then there was another double game week that you ended up playing pretty hard that featured QPR and Aston Villa, two very unsexy FPL teams.
Yeah.
And that ended up winning you our mini league, effectively.
Yeah, Charlie Austin and Benteke.
So, to burn points, burning points for a conservative player like me, and our styles of play will certainly become more prevalent as the season goes on. But I'm generally a conservative player, which is something I'm working on, something I've tried to talk through. burning points on transfers week to week is very difficult for me. But what you stand to gain from a double game week, totally worth it. So you've got to always consider how you're going to play that.
Yeah, I agreed. My final one is this one's a little more complicated, I guess, but it's don't take a punt on a player without an exit plan. So if you decide,
oh, do tell, Professor.
So if you decide that you know, it's week, whatever, doesn't matter what time of the year it is, and you are going to bring in a risky player, you know, somebody who isn't guaranteed to start, but if they start, they could bring explosive returns, you know, like a Theo Walcott, you know, like actually a Theo Walcott right now is a perfect example of this, because he's priced at 9 million for the FPL this season. He has been scoring a lot in the preseason. But there's no guarantee that he's going to start these games.
Also, I mean, his legs are likely to fall off at any moment.
But, I mean, there's not a natural fit for him in that lineup unless he's starting at the forward spot instead of Giroud. I mean, you can play him on the wings, but there are other players who are probably a better fit there. And when Alexis Sanchez comes back, probably 2 weeks into the season, he's going to be in even more trouble. So if you bring in a Theo Walcott or any sort of attacking player, you've got to know what your move is once they're not starting. Like, also, you've got to have a plan in mind for who costs about the same that you can move to right off the bat. And so this is a big thing for me, is if I'm taking kind of a risky pick, I know immediately what I'm going to do if that pick doesn't pan out. And you know, I usually give it one or 2 weeks, depending.
And to take that Walcott-Sanchez example, I think Sanchez is priced at 11 million. So if you say you wanted to do an outright swap with Walcott and Sanchez, you also have to know where in your team you've got an extra 2 million laying around. So maybe it's a two-week exit plan.
It's not often one move. It's often two moves. I mean, this is something that you really have to plan for at the beginning of this season, because Sergio Aguero and Alexis Sanchez probably are going to start the first 2 weeks. Those are players that it's going to be hard not to have, you know, starting in week three or four or whatever. So you've just got to be—you've got to know what your moves are going to be. You know, don't back yourself into a corner.
Okay, so now the season is, as we're recording this, like 9-10 days away. We're all setting our squads for the very first game week, kickoff August 7th. Is that right, August 7th? August 8th?
8th, I think.
Yeah, August 8th. So to the hardest part always of setting your first team of the season is you're introduced to three brand-new teams, the promoted teams, and you've heard of maybe one or two guys on each of these teams. Where do you start? Because these are teams with the cheapest priced players that are going to help fill out your bench, be that fourth position in your defense or the fifth position in the midfield, or even is going to be your surprise wild card up in your striking trio. I don't know. So Josh and I figured it'd be worthwhile just quickly running through the three promoted teams and pointing out the most worthwhile assets. So how did we break this down, Josh?
So I took a look at the managers and the strikers, and you're looking at the midfielders and the defenders.
Yeah. So, okay. So I figured the best way to do the rundown is let's start with Watford, because Watford won the championship last season. They're the top dogs coming in.
Yeah, actually, Bournemouth won the championship last season. They nipped him by a point the last game.
Oh, right, because Watford blew their last game.
I think they actually won, but they conceded a late goal, and it was like on goal difference or something. But
so we're gonna start with Bournemouth. Okay, so that's gonna be the easiest team name for me to say through the whole season. Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. Let's start with them. They won the championship last season. Who's their coach?
Okay, so I think Bournemouth. I think you say myth like MYTH. I guess.
Would be however you want to say it is fine with
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Well, anyway, born something. Their manager is actually he's a pretty interesting guy, Eddie Howe. He's a former player for Bournemouth. Longtime manager, despite the fact that he's only 37 years old. He became a manager in his very early 30s and has actually managed them through three promotions. He left for one season to become the manager for what is it? The team that just got relegated last year.
Burnley.
Yeah, thank you. Burnley. Sorry.
I said Burnley. That's how good I am.
That's right. So he left for 1 year and then he came back and he has taken them out of League Two into League One, from League One into the Championship, and now from the Championship into
He's like Gene Hackman.
It's incredible. It really is. And so 37. Obviously much love there. It's Bournemouth's first time in the first division ever in their 100 plus year history.
I was totally getting behind the cheers, the hype cheers as Bournemouth was rising up the ranks, up the Cherries, because their mm-hmm. mascot is, they're actually based in Traverse City, Michigan. So up the Cherries, I totally love that. Up the Cherries.
Yeah. They scored. They're actually a little bit like Leicester last season. They scored the because I think the team's gonna be pretty similar too, which is what happened with Leicester last year. They scored the most goals in the championship last year, and they conceded the second fewest goals. So they're pretty all around sound team. In terms of their forwards, it's hard to. I mean, so they have two guys who are interesting. One is Callum Wilson, who scored 20 goals in 45 games last year. He's at 5.5 million. I don't know what to think about him yet. I think all of the forwards at Bournemouth are really wait and see. The other guy is Jan Kermagant, who scored 15 goals in 38. I probably butchered that name. And he's available.
It's fine.
He's available at 5 million. I would wait and see on both these forwards. Okay.
I wish we had noted which of these guys have full sleeve arm tattoos, because that also is how I inform my decisions. You didn't happen to note that, did you?
I didn't. The one player you may have this in your notes, so forgive me.
Don't step on my Matt Ritchie toes.
No, I was going to talk about Josh King. Do you have Josh King in your notes?
Josh
there?
King, the new boy, the new Norwegian guy.
Mm-hmm. He just signed from Blackburn, and he's listed at 5 million, and he's listed as a midfielder, but he's probably going to play out of position as a forward. So he may be one person to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, that's a great tip. The OP player, say he's a midfielder, he's going to be getting 5 points per goal as opposed to four, and that is quite a deal at 5.0. And he has, just looking at the preseason for Josh King, who's gotten a couple of starts, he's already scored two goals for Bournemouth in the preseason. And like I was saying, the other midfielder who you want to know about is Matt Ritchie, who was one of their talismen last season. He scored 11 goals, 13 assists for them.
I feel like every championship team that comes up, they need someone who's a talisman. That's like the only word you can use is talismanic. Yeah.
And you can recognize a talisman by the fact that he is the most expensively priced player on the team. So he's actually probably not that viable for your FPL team because he's priced at 6.0, which is pretty pricey for a newly promoted team.
Yeah, that is pretty pricey.
But yeah, I like your call on Josh King there.
What were his stats, Richie? Do you have them there?
Last season?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he scored 11 goals and he had 13 assists last season.
Okay, so pretty. I mean, those are
very consistent.
Cesc Fabregas type numbers. I mean, obviously you don't expect him to repeat those in the Premier League.
It's going to be tough. And then quickly looking at their defense, the sexiest transfer of the offseason, perhaps, Sylvain Distan from Everton, at a whopping 37 years old. Like, he's getting up to Brad Friedel levels here.
I can't imagine picking up Sylvain Distan, despite the fact that he's like the one player I can name on this team.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's priced at 4.5. He has started in the central defense at least once in their preseason. He could be the Rio Ferdinand of this year. Well, you remember Rio Ferdinand was traded
QPR.
To QPR and saw like a full 180 minutes of play, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But then just looking at the defense, it's just looking for guys getting consistent starts who are part of either part of last season's successful campaign or guys who like big players brought in from outside big teams that clearly are being groomed for Premier League starts. So in the defense for Bournemouth, you've got this guy Simon Francis at 4.5 and also Charles Daniels, who starts in the defense. Those guys look like surefire starts in the defense. But for me, the goalkeepers at Bournemouth, this is the most hilarious FPL situation because I've got two guys in goal who I recognize from previous FPL seasons. You have crazy Arthur Barak, who we'll all remember from Southampton. And he was the main goalkeeper for Bournemouth last season and saw them up the table. But it looks like he's trying to shirk off a shoulder injury. And former Reading goalkeeper Adam Federici, you remember him from Reading a couple seasons back?
Of course, Reading. The most. I mean, they have to be the least interesting promoted team of the last 4 or 5 years, right? I mean, that team just came and went. Like, it was the most forgettable team outside of. I can't even. I mean, there was like a. Like an Icelandic guy. That's all I remember. Was it Gunnarsson?
Maybe. They also had Pavel Pogrebniak, the Russian guy who also played for Fulham, which is why his name sticks with me. But
he was a lot of alliteratively named players on that team.
Alliterative letdowns, for sure. So, yeah, it looks like Federici might be getting the start. Both of them are priced at 4.5.
Okay.
And also in other MLS news, Bournemouth beat the Philadelphia Union 4-1 in their American tour. So
is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. So
is the Philadelphia Union supposed to be like the best team in MLS?
I think it's DC United, actually.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, interchangeable as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Okay. So let's move on to Watford. Who's managing Watford this season, Josh?
Yeah. Go. So. The whole Watford thing is kind of crazy. So Kike Flores is the new
manager.
Great
uniforms, by the way.
They are. He is.
Wait, so, say his name again, because his name is amazing.
Kike Flores, I believe is how you pronounce it. It's Q-U-I-Q-U-E. He is a longtime manager. He's managed a lot of Spanish clubs. He actually won the Europa League in 2010 with Atletico Madrid. And that was the year that Atletico Madrid beat Fulham in the final.
Yeah,
that was the Diego Forlán's big breakout year before
beautiful head of hair
before the World Cup. So he's been at Valencia, Benfica, and Atletico. He is the fifth manager since last August. They couldn't come to terms with the other manager, so Slavisa Djokanovic. And they've signed so the team. It's really hard to get.
So that's a little bit of a worry, though. Like, not a steady manager that can blow up in teams' faces.
It's hard to get a good sense of their style of play at the very least. And they've actually signed 10 players this summer, so it's just a really tough team to assess. They did score the second highest number of goals in the championship, And I guess the player to keep an eye out here for here is, and actually, of all the forwards that I'm talking about, this is the one of the promoted teams that I'm the most interested in keeping an eye on, which is Troy Deeney. He is the captain of the team.
Which he is not a Brazilian player with just one name, Troy Deeney.
Troy Deeney, yeah. Troy space Deeney. He scored 21 goals in 42 appearances last year. He's the captain of the team. He is $5.5 million. And he scored 20-plus goals for Watford three seasons in a row. So there is some consistency there. You know, whether that translates into results in the Premier League, you know, we'll see. But we've seen it, you know, we saw it last year with certainly with Charlie Austin and, you know, also with a couple of the players on Leicester. So,
yeah.
So he's one to keep an eye out for. Not at $5.5 million, the problem there is that if you get him – and then you max out your money elsewhere. If he doesn't really deliver results, you kind of got to do some surgery on your team to get up to 8-9 million, whatever you need to pick up a more higher price forward.
Yeah, and it's tough to have an impotent player up there in your strike force because then you're just stuck playing two guys up front, which is really limiting your scoring.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of got caught that way like midway through last season where I had what's his name, the West Brom Berahino, and I had him during this stretch where he just stopped scoring. You know, he scored, I think he's ended up scoring almost 20 goals in the season, but he had the stretch of about 10 weeks where he didn't score, and those are the 10 weeks when I had him.
Yeah, it was like after his England call-up, he basically thought he was hot shit, and then it all fell apart.
Yeah. Now we got to put a language.
E for expletive.
So that's really all I have to say about
it. Sitting behind Troy Deeney, the one guy you want to look out for in the midfield is this guy, Gerardo, who has an incredible Champions League pedigree behind him. He's started off at Real Madrid, and he's also played for Atletico Madrid, and he's just coming from Schalke in the Bundesliga.
Interesting. And is it Gerardo one word?
Gerardo, one word. He's, you know, I think he has names, other names on either side of Gerardo, but people seem to, in all the press write-ups, just be referring to him as Gerardo.
Okay.
So, yeah, he looks like a guaranteed start, and he'll have the medal, at least on paper, it looks like he has that medal to compete in a Premier League midfield. And always happy to see our friend Gomez. Let's see. What is his name from Tottenham Hotspur,
who
was like a perennial disaster for them a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, ruined their Champions League campaign.
Yep. But he is he was playing with Watford through all of last season, and he looks to be starting for them, and he's at the standard 4.5 price tag. Cool. Should we talk about Norwich real quick?
That was a sad.
Did you have the same feeling as me? Just like, this is the same team that was relegated two seasons ago.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening. I was thinking about Watford. The same thing with Norwich, though. Really, yeah. So Norwich. The most interesting thing about them is probably their manager, Alex Neil, who is 34 years old, and he is kind of like a shooting star type. He's similar to Alex Ferguson, actually, that he made his name in the Scottish Premier League and just joined the English Premier League from Hamilton Academical, which is one of the great names of any of the European clubs.
Oh, yeah.
And he took Hamilton Academical from the second division to the first last year, and then at midseason moved to Norwich and then guided them into they won the playoff last year. You know, there's not a lot to know about him yet because he doesn't have a very long track record. They say he tightened up the defense. You know, I did see the championship game last year against Middlesbrough, and they looked pretty strong.
Okay.
I mean, so, it's the same.
Before we get any further, did you see in their preseason results their game against Hitchin Town, who plays in the ninth division?
I did not.
Okay, so I'm looking at this right now. Norwich City, this preseason, on July 14th, played 9th Division Hitchin Town. Guess what the score line was?
I'm going to guess 8-0.
Close. 10-0. Norwich beat poor little old Hitchin Town. Mm-hmm. unbelievable. I'm sure they're going to beat
believable,
every,
actually.
Yeah, they're going to just they're just going to destroy the Premier League based on results like that.
So their strikers, I mean, it's all retreads here. Cameron Jerome, who did score 21 goals last year, and actually he did score in that playoff final. But
People might recognize him from his stint at Stoke City.
Yeah, from his many flops in the Premier League. Gary Hooper, another major flop.
Sounds like the American star of an 80s sitcom. Starring Gary Hooper.
It shows you how far Norwich has fallen, too, because Gary Hooper, when he joined the Premier League 2 years ago, was priced at $7 million, along with Ricky Van Wolfswinkel. They're both still on the team, but it looks like Wolfswinkel's going to head to Sporting Lisbon. But Hooper Hooper's priced at 4.5. Scored 12 goals in 32 games last year, so he's got the pedigree. He came from Celtic few years ago with a strong record, so who knows?
It looks like the cheapest lineup of forwards in any team I've ever seen. You've got Cameron Jerome and Van Wolfswinkel, who both look like they're on their way, priced at 5.0, and then the other three guys are 4.5. So there are bargains to be had here.
That's true. Maybe you want to, hang on to Lewis Grabham, who's 4.5.
Don't just hang on to him. Grab him and don't let go.
He scored 12 and 33, so possibly someone to keep an eye out for. But I think, none of these Norwich strikers are getting me excited for the start of the season.
Yeah, it's the same deal with their defense and their midfield. Just their goalkeepers. You've got Ruddy versus Rudd. John Ruddy, who I believe he was the guy that just was roasted four times by Suarez 2 seasons ago.
Every time they played, Suarez always had Norwich's number.
So the better named Declan Rudd is just below John Ruddy, but it looks like Ruddy's the starter. He's at 4.5. And then the defense is, they're not even retreads. These are retreads of defenders for Norwich that never even started when Norwich was in the Premier League. So guys starting like Stephen Whittaker, who did net in that 10-0 game. So maybe he's on the uptick. And
I've had Whittaker on my team before.
Sure, yeah. The ultimate bench player. But Sebastian Bassong, I guess he is the one he's like the biggest defender. He's the one that would probably threaten on corner kicks. And then midfield, there's the famous bevy of very United Kingdom sounding guys like Wes Houlihan, who is an on again off again starter, but he has scored in the preseason. He's priced at 5.0. He's not a terrible option. But the guy I really like is Nathan Redmond, who is a very streaky player, but he has scored some rocket goals from well outside. And then
still pretty young too. I think Redmond, I think he's 22 or 23. So there's some potential there.
Yeah,
he did score in the championship final too. So I might be a little biased, but he was always, I actually had him 2 years ago for a while too, and I think he wasn't. He hadn't quite put it all together yet, so he's someone I'm keeping an eye on this year.
And then there is Yusuf Malumbu, who he plays more of a holding defensive role, but like a few others, other defensive mids, he can get up and get into a scoring position for you. So he's at 4.5. That's a possible bargain there.
All right. Maybe Malumbu. That's just not a bad team name, actually.
Maybe Malumbu. awesome. So on that Malumbu note, should we sign off and get back to setting our teams?
Yeah, I think so.
Our next podcast going to be after week one? So we don't want to reveal too much about our own teams here because you and I are locked in Mortal Kombat for $50.
That's right. The 50 buck cup. Do you want to tell people where they can find us if they're so inclined?
Yes, absolutely. If you're so inclined, you can find us at, only if you really want to, but we do pay money for a domain name at alwayscheating.com, and there you can check out ways to join a public league that we're setting up where there will be nothing at stake, but you can play with your fellow Always Cheating companions. And we also have ways to reach out to us either by email or Twitter, Facebook, and all that sort of stuff.
Great. And yeah, and you can actually leave comments on there too. We're one of the few websites left where comment sections are exist.
Alive and well.
Yeah. Excited about that.
Yeah. So yeah, you can find the podcast on alwayscheating.com, or you can subscribe in iTunes where you'll just get it automatically.
That's right.
Cool. Well, we're looking forward to a long but delicious season, Josh.
38 short weeks, Brandon.
Or should I call you Magic Micah?
I would prefer that. Or just Micah. That's fine, too. Or just Richards. That works.
Okay. All right, Josh. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.